everyone, and welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I am Lacey Barger-Miles, and I'm the editor here at Televisions. And joining me, as usual, is my co-host, Miss Annie Bundle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
Fine. I don't know. It's sort of just like it's a day that's happening.
Hey,
it's not awful.
You weren't doing paperwork all day.
Great.
You weren't doing paperwork all day.
That's true. I did do paperwork all day yesterday, which was definitely worse than this. I'm not a paperwork kind of girl.
And you weren't stuck in terrible meetings all day. So today was not a bad day. Today was merely an average day. And you know, could be worse. Could be like not Oscars weekend.
This is our inspirational speech, guys. This episode is, I don't know. If it feels a little weird, it's because it is a little weird. We originally were going to do a different episode, and the logistics of doing that episode just went straight into the toilet. So now we are doing a different episode from what we originally intended, which is why this all feels very rushed and last minute, which is a little bit kind of keeping in theme of what we're going to talk about, which is BritBox's new adaptation of Agatha Christie's Murder is Easy. And to help us out with that, a brand new friend of the pod, our regular contributor, Marnie Cerise, is here to hang out with us and talk about this stuff. Welcome, Marnie.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Great to be here.
Hello.
Hello. I'm so glad you made time to, like, you know, come and rescue our podcast from the depths of expletive.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm on board. I'm here to help.
You're welcome, Mark. I did not curse. I am very proud of myself. So I am actually excited about the fact that we're talking about Murder is Easy. Because as
I just want for the record to note that the one we were gonna do that is not this one was a rated for Lacey show, and I said okay to switching it to this. So I better get some like celestial brownie points or something somewhere.
I promise that we'll do something rated for Lacey at the next Classics Revisited. I promise. Okay.
That's really why Classics Revisited exists.
I know. But we'll definitely make it not a mystery. How's that?
Thanks.
Okay. Like, you're welcome. But now we're going to talk about Agatha Christie, which is like one of my favorite things in the entire universe. And honestly, like, I'm really glad that we got to do this because this is not just an Agatha Christie mystery, but honestly, one of the best adaptations of modernizations of an Agatha Christie mystery that I have seen in quite some time. And so I'm very pleased that we're talking about it. Marnie, you're the one who got to review this for us and talk to the cast.
Yep, absolutely.
Would you like to sort of sum up the plot of Murder is Easy?
Sure. So we start with Luke Fitzwilliam. He's our main character. He is Nigerian and on his way to a diplomatic post in England, in London. He, on the train, meets Penelope Wilton's character, who is Miss Pinkerton. She divulges to him that she has suspicions about murders in her town. Well, suspicious deaths in her town that she thinks are murders. And she's on her way to Scotland Yard to report these murders. And when they get to London, so he kind of becomes a fast friend of hers, and she really she very much engages him and trusts him right away. But when they get to London, she gets killed, and he suspects, you know, that this is another strange death, and he feels very much in need of figuring out this mystery, and he has to go to her town. He's going to her town to figure out this mystery. There's a couple scenes where he's talking to his friends. He goes to a I guess what you would call like a, it's not, what do you call it when it's a, like a house that's for the Nigerians. I forget what you call it.
It's like a hostel.
Not a hostel. It's like a state. It's almost
like an embassy.
Like an embassy. It is more like an embassy club sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So he runs into some friends there who are like, what are you doing? Don't follow this line of questioning at all. They're going to see you as an outsider. or something worse, don't follow this mystery. And he just can't let it go. So he goes to her town. He pretends to be investigating a book. Like, he pretends he's an author and he wants to talk about, you know, the local customs of England versus his Nigerian folklore customs. And he gets people to talk to him. He meets Bridget immediately. And she is a very striking woman. She is a local, and they meet at the coroner's inquest, essentially, where the two initial murders that Fitzwilliam was told about, they're being investigated. So they meet, and they're attracted to each other initially. There's kind of a little flirtation that goes on, and then he finds out that she's engaged to, like, the bigwig of town, the Lord, Lord Whitehall. And what a character he is. He's a piece of work.
it is kind of All Creatures Great and Small that way, in the sort of, like, James meets Helen and Helen's engaged to, like, the richest guy in town. It's definitely got that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Except this time he's a eugenicist instead of a veterinarian, so that's a downer.
well, the Lord isn't. It's the doctor who
is. I think
is.
He's got some eugenicist tendencies.
You're probably right. You're probably right.
I mean, he doesn't have the books in his cupboard, but I don't get the vibe he doesn't like those books.
Well, that's true. He does use the phrase mud huts when talking to Fitzwilliam upon first meeting him. So you're right on the money there, I think. And with Bridget's help, well, actually, Bridget figures out that he's kind of full of it and unpeels his cover story. But when she figures out that he actually did meet Miss Pinkerton and he's trying to not avenge her death, but make sure that her death doesn't get swept under the rug, he and she, Bridget and Fitzwilliam, become fast friends, and they are the sleuthing partners through the rest of this the show here, and it's fascinating because she's a sharp, you know, she's a sharp character, that Bridget, and she is sometimes cleverer than he is. He sort of just, he has this innate sense of justice and needs to see these murders come to light. He needs to see the murderer come to justice, where Bridget is, you're not entirely certain about her motivation. I mean, clearly she cares about the people who are being murdered, but there's more to it. I think it's she finds something that is intellectually stimulating to her, and that's really what that's about for her.
Yeah. The thing about Agatha Christie mysteries that I have always loved is that, and it's a thing that sort of got lost in the 100 years or so since she started writing them, is that all of her detectives are basically outcasts of society. Poirot is an immigrant. Marple is an elderly woman who is basically ignored. A theme that Murder is Easy hits again and again and again. Murder is Easy, actually, when it's done, this is one of those... this is one of those mysteries that isn't a Poirot mystery or a Marple mystery. It's actually a Superintendent Battle mystery. That's one of her lesser known characters.
Is that a character in this show?
No. They get rid of it. They get rid of him. They replace him basically with Fitzwilliam here. Basically, you know how there's Partners in Crime, and we know about Partners in Crime because PBS basically did a bunch of Agatha Christie Partners in Crime. There are the same number of Superintendent Battle books, but because no one has ever done, like, Agatha Christie's Superintendent Battle because he's not popular, like, nobody knows about him.
Oh, okay.
But she actually wrote the same number of Superintendent Battle books that she did Partners in Crime books.
The way that you're gesturing wildly and excited to be as you... cutely assume I have any idea how many Partners in Crime books there are is kind of great. I have no idea.
Anyway, point being, all of Agatha Christie's detectives are always like they're the people that society doesn't really take seriously. Like, Battle is kind of he's not upper class, he's working class. Tommy and Tuppence are young hip things and who aren't treated seriously. Like, that's sort of that's always her thing with with her detectives is they're people who aren't, who society sort of like ignores because they're not white middle class men. And this really hits that, especially by making, you know, Luke Fitzwilliam, black Nigerian immigrant, and actually doing this as a race conscious script. I mean, that's the thing, is I've actually never seen an Agatha Christie that was race conscious before. And like, it was sort of mind blowing that it's 2024 and this is the first time I'm seeing a race conscious Agatha Christie. Like, nobody did this before. And also, holy crap, why didn't anybody do this before? Like, it's so obvious, and yet, like, and it's perfect for Agatha Christie because this is sort of her jam. And, you know, Bridget is exactly the sort of thing, like, she's a Tuppence figure in this way. And you know, Luke is kind of like a young Poirot figure this way. And so I really loved this interpretation of it. And I do think the fact that they hit that theme of old women aren't listened to over and over again is really important, because when this story got done before, the time it was adapted before, because this is one that hasn't been adapted a lot because people don't really do the battle books, is it was done as a Marple mystery, where basically Superintendent Battle was removed and Marple was put in, and basically she's Marple meets Lavinia on the train and sees her get murdered and decides to go to the town, and that's basically how they do it. And that's, I find it really fascinating that, like, the theme of it is basically that old women aren't listened to. And so, of course, this is one that they turned into a Marple mystery when they did it before. Anyway, Lacey, you were going to say something?
Was I? I think my question is, so they just made up, the Fitzwilliam character kind of like out of whole cloth.
No. He is a character in the book. He's kind of like Battle's like sidekick.
Oh, okay.
And so they just removed him wholesale and, like, made Fitzwilliam and Bridget the pair that solved the mystery here.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, you were saying?
I was going to say that actually something that sort of on the technical side of things, I really like the fact that they changed just the very beginning from the original book, how they made everything more active. Like, they made everything more... like everyone had agency, in especially Luke Fitzwilliam's case, because in the original he just reads about her death like in the paper, and the fact that it happens right in front of him, the fact that they compound that with him having just won money for her, you know, at the dog races, like all of this has this extra oomph and it gets you more into the story. I found that to be a lot more engaging.
I also really love the fact that he basically goes up to the cop and tries to say, hey, this is the cop just looks at him and kind of taps his hand. Well, because it's his handcuffs, because that's all he's got, because it's not America. But it's still enough where it's like, right, never mind, we're just going to back up.
I asked David Johnson about that scene specifically because I found it really interesting, and he loved that scene, and he said that they had done a few different takes to kind of get it right and to make sure, in his words, he said they wanted to be ahead of the audience rather than the other way around. But yeah, like it was such a moment of having something that is still so relevant now. So relevant then, and it just it was so powerful. It's such a tiny moment, but it's so powerful.
I as I said, like, it was one of those moments, like, when I first saw it, that I was just like, oh yes, okay, this is a show that we have to cover. Anyway, I know that I sort of forced you into watching this, Lacey, but how did you feel about it?
I didn't hate it. Like, you forced me to watch worse things. I mean,
I know.
We love something that's 2 episodes long. I've been watching a lot of things that are like 8-10 episodes recently, and it's just,
hey, listen, One Day was 14 episodes. I have questions.
I did not watch One Day. partially for that reason.
Dude, in this economy, 14 episodes, I have questions.
No, no, children. 14 episodes is just not, it's not happening. So I appreciate its brevity, but I also think, wait, I'll say a couple more positive things first before I say negative things. I like how attractive everyone is. Like, this is just a cast full of lookers, so that helped a lot. I think it's, I love the actress from Lord of the Rings. She's, I think she's so great.
Morfydd Clark, yeah.
I love seeing her without elf ears and actually like performing like a period piece, like something that isn't like a Lord of the Rings thing. I think that's really great for her. I also think that this is a really good thing for her to be doing that isn't like fantasy stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really smart move for her.
Okay. Let's see what else. I thought the show looked great. Like, clearly they spent a bunch of money on this. The cinematography is lovely. The visuals are lovely. All the sets are very lavish. This kind of pains me a little what I'm about to say, because I did so appreciate that it was short, but I don't think the shortness of it necessarily does it any favors, because it's so compacted that you don't have any time to like really react to anything. And everybody is mostly surface level characters. Everything is very rushed. There's very little nuance. I always joke about how these mystery shows that are so popular that are set in random towns are have a body count that is to a degree that I don't understand why their residents don't move. Like, how many people drop dead in this town in like 2 days? Get in the car. Like, the fact that no one seems to be that bothered or even afraid of just like a swath of people dying all over town in like a very compressed amount of time is disturbing to me. Get your lives together.
But that is part of it, though. Like, the people who are dying, I think that's part of the point of the first half anyway. The people who are dying are the folks who are lower class, and it's not being addressed.
You know, I actually think it would have been more interesting if the whole thing was like that instead of what it turned out to be.
Okay.
But I really feel, I also mostly just feel like I barely even, I am notoriously bad with remembering characters' names. It's why I always leave the subtitles on. But like, I feel like in this particular adaptation, there is no reason for me to learn like a bunch of people's names, because they just die like instantly. And or they either die instantly or they are so tangential to like the larger motion of the plot that I don't need to know who they are. Or they are like there for one specific plot point and then never used again. I don't know. It feels very crammed. As much as I appreciate that it was short, I don't know that two was the right number. I don't know that, I don't know. I feel like if I cared about these characters, I would feel that the disservice had been done to some of them. But most of them were new to me, so I didn't.
Okay, part of the reason why it's two is because this is basically what keeps happening over in the UK is that they do these new sets of Christie things. So for a long time, there was the ITV.
Wait, Agatha, I'm just going to pin this for a second to say all of these things are perfectly great and understandable behind the scenes reasons for something happening. That is not an explanation for an in-universe thing, though. Like, it's much like I think that prequels need to be able to stand on their own as their own story without you knowing anything else about it that's connected to. This needs to work on its own, with or without all this behind the scenes stuff happening. Or this is how they do it or whatever. Like, the show is the show.
I have to agree with you. And I do think that the fact that they are attempting to make all of these two-part, we had like all those Agatha Christie Marples that were all 1 hour things. And then we had all those Agatha Christie Poirots that were 1 hour. And then we had the Sarah Phelps things that were very specifically done with Amazon and were done as TV movies. And now these, which are done that are basically done as ITV, BBC, basically co-productions, and that BritBox has basically been co-producing along with them. And they're always done as two 1 hour episodes, and they're always aired like over like a holiday. And I don't like the fact that they feel like they have to conform to this in order to fit into this. This is where we are now in the Christie universe. This is our Christie universe, and they all match this. And I don't like that. I didn't like it with the Poirot. I always loved David Suchet's Poirots, but I always felt like, why do you have to make it an hour? If you need 2 hours, you should make it 2 hours. If you need 3 episodes, you should make it 3 episodes.
I think you could have cut out some of the murders. So many murders happen. You could just ditch a couple. I would have been fine.
This is a little odd that they insist on keeping in all the murders in such a compressed time frame. I absolutely do agree with you there.
Get in the car. Get in the car.
Also,
just leave.
But also, it's partly because there's all these big stars who they want to fit in. Because the other point of this is that they're star-studded. And that's also, if you looked at the, why didn't they ask Evans, which was the last one they did, which is the first one, which was also in the same way, a 2 hour over two nights thing that aired in the same way and was done by Hugh Laurie. It's the same thing. Like they had this big group of stars in the same way. They had a young man and a young woman who were quasi-romantic in the same way. It was also another Superintendent Battle book where Battle was cut in the same way. It was also another done as a Marple mystery when it was originally done before in the same way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The thing that creeped me out and that kind of got me about this is that we have that whole scene with
Is it the eugenics?
Yeah,
for me, eugenics, it was the eugenics.
Okay, eugenics guy who is from he's the guy from the Nevers, and I'm going to remember his name.
And Ghosts.
Yes, Ghosts. Thank you.
Matthew Boynton? Boynton.
Matthew Boynton and the Lord guy. The Lord guy is from the Nevers. The Lord guy from the Nevers.
Tom Riley.
Thank you, Tom Riley. Tom Riley getting all like, this is divine for me. Like,
Why do people who commit crimes talk so much? Like, this is the question that I have. Like, girl, you could have killed.
It's the Batman villain
thing. You could have killed what's her face like 10 minutes ago. Like, but you're still talking.
Yep.
Get on
it's
with
so
it.
It's so true. But like that whole scene where he's like, God is killing all the people in this town for me because they crossed me. Like,
that's
just
from the book.
Right. I know. But like, seriously, if somebody said that to me, I'd get in the car. Okay. Like, I would be 100% with Lacey, like, pack the car and we're leaving, right? Like, that to me was probably one of the creepiest moments of that, more than anything else. Like, but I get that the reason that they wanted to have all of the characters, because they wanted to be able to fit in Matthew Boynton, and they wanted to be able to fit in, you know, guy from Guilt, Mark Bonner. They wanted to fit in, they wanted to get all these guys in, because they want to be able to have this giant cast. They wanted to be, you know, hang this on Penelope Wilton, even though she's only in the damn thing for like 10 minutes, right? Like, they had, I mean, her name was sprawled across the whole thing. She was the first name they announced. She was the one holding the clapperboard, partly because, you know, David Johnson, no shame to David Johnson. Like, no, he's been in industry, but industry is not a hit in this country, okay? Partly because HBO has not pushed it in any way, shape, or form. It's one of those Lost on Mac shows. And I really hope this is his breakout and that he gets much bigger roles and that we see him in larger things after this, because he deserves a much bigger career. Also, people should be watching Industry, because Industry is really great. This has been your Industry plug for the year. I'm just saying. But honestly, like, I know that that's why they plugged her and not him. Also, Downton Abbey, because PBS people. But also, like, yes, I think that they probably should have looked at the script and done the Coco Chanel thing and take two murders out before they walked out the door.
It's just a lot. And and the thing is because the show is so short, there's no time to really get to know most of the people that die, or not even get to know, recognize. Let's lower the bar, most of the people who die. So I'm like, oh, that random man is dead.
Right.
No, like, it's well, seriously.
The first two that you never meet, the first two people who die, they're just, you know, they're just talked about. And that was it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, I know characters' names much more than most people because I pay attention because it's kind of my job. And I was still like, ghost guy, guilt guy. Right? Like, I was absolutely guilty of doing that the entire way.
I'm glad Mark Bonner is getting his money. I hate guilt, but good for you, sir.
Dude, honestly, like, I'm really glad that he's doing things that are not guilt, just like I'm really glad that Jamie Zivies is doing things that are not guilt as well. I would like Annika season 3 to come back, please. Thank you.
Hey, just as somebody who was like, I would like Miss Scarlet and the Duke to get renewed and got her wish in the worst way, maybe be careful how you ask for that.
Oh my God. Bite your tongue.
I'm just saying.
If you just wished Annika to come back without Paul McGann, I'm done.
Anything is possible now.
Anyway, sorry. I just flames on the side of my face.
Flames. So I had a quick question.
Yes, Barney.
1954 is when this is set. Was I the only one who didn't know until the very end that's exactly when this was set?
Oh, 100%. Had no idea. Had no idea.
I was so confused through the whole, like, I kept writing in my notes. I'm like, when are we? When does this take place? I don't get it. I didn't end up saying this in my review because I just did. I wasn't sure if it was just me, to be honest.
Nope, not
because,
just you.
No. Okay.
I mean, it was very, okay. To me, it was very obviously post-World War II. And I actually wrote, I think the first time when I first watched it, I actually wrote, I had just watched Three Little Birds. And so I wrote post-Wind from Wind Rush Part 2.
I actually wondered about that too, because I was like, is he, because like the first shot is like the boat.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
Right. And I was like,
okay, what are like notable crossings?
Right. And so I actually wondered if we were like in the late 40s or early. I was like, is it 47, 48? Are we, is this another Windrush story? Is this going to be like more like, or is it going to be 10 years on from Windrush? So it didn't actually surprise me that much when they finally said it was 54.
Because people are real racist.
Oh, I mean, it's Brits. What do you expect? In the 1950s, what do you expect? Yeah.
Yes, but we were all just talking about how none of us knew it was the 1950s.
Right. Well, so I got a clue when Bridget got out of the car and she was wearing essentially a poodle skirt, but like nobody else was dressed like her. Or even in the same, I mean, clearly she has money and there are not a lot of the other folks did, but like, it didn't seem to match for me. Like I didn't get a consistent time frame from anything that was going on.
Most of them are dressed in pre-World War II styles, but you know, remember that after World War II there was massive poverty in England.
Well, and also their little village is like in the back of beyond, so
yeah. So the fact that a lot of fashions had not basically like updated doesn't surprise me that much, but yes, it does sort of lend to the confusion of when is it.
I think you are giving that too much credit as some sort of deliberate choice.
Oh no, probably I probably am, but honestly, like, that, yes, it is confusing, and I absolutely agree with you, and I did not know it was 1954 until Bridget said it at the end.
Well, I figured it had to be at least post-World War II because Dr. Eugenicist is waving around like a Hitler book.
Right. Those were my two clues. It was the poodle skirt and the Nazi books. And I was like, oh, okay, wait a minute. Yeah.
But that's really all they give you. Yes. And there is nothing really that tells you that it's 1954 until that very end. Yes.
Yeah.
And I do kind of love the idea of like Bridget going off and becoming like her own detective. I do love that.
Yeah.
Like, I would watch that show. Absolutely. I actually kind of hope that maybe, like, I and I know this won't be, but like, it, considering they have just greenlit the next Agatha Christie to follow, which is Toward Zero.
What?
You know, if she turns up as the detective in that, I will not complain. Okay, so Toward Zero is hilariously
toward like the direction.
Yes, Toward Zero. Hilariously, another superintendent battle book. Hilariously, also
done. I don't believe this man is real. I am that lady on the plane.
It is Superintendent Battle, I promise you. And it was also done as a Miss Marple in Agatha Christie's Marple. And the Agatha Christie Marple adaptation that they did actually stars Eileen Atkins and Julian Sands. So if you want to watch that episode, I think it was like season, I don't actually know what season it was. It was season something or other.
I have to tell you guys, because I knew like so little about this, when Penelope Wilton got on the train in her little like hat and matching jacket, I was like, oh my gosh, is Penelope Wilton Miss Marple? Annie didn't tell me. And then she kicks it.
Believe me, if she had been Miss Marple, I would have told you. Though honestly, I kind
like,
of actually.
Who the hell is Lavinia?
Is it a fake name? No. But I do kind of love that. Yeah, Toward Zero is actually the last Superintendent Battle book that she ever wrote. It's from the mid 1940s. I'm curious to see what they do with it. I mean, I assume in the same way they'll cut her out. They'll cut out Battle in the same way. I wouldn't. It's one of those things. It's one of those ones where like there's an old lady who's in bed and she's bedridden, but she still invites everybody to come to her house and throws a house party.
And they all die.
No, she dies while they're house partying around her, because of course she does. In the Miss Marple version, Miss Marple is basically inserted wholesale as a guest, and Battle's role is like completely reduced to like the local the local like policeman. And I sort of assume that they'll basically like take one of the guests and make them like the sleuth, and they won't, you know, that's basically how they'll do it again. Though, you know, the thing is that with BritBox now being bought out by the BBC, like I do know this one will still come to BritBox, because one of the things that the BBC was very, very quick to say when that deal was announced is that they were not changing anything in the pipeline right away. Mm-hmm. That the pipeline is the pipeline, and everything that they has been announced that is coming to BritBox, every partnership that BritBox is in the middle of is staying as is, and they are not changing anything, and that no one has to worry, nothing is being canceled. And I do actually think that that is true, because I think, because the reason that the BBC bought BritBox was not to cancel any of these shows. It's because they don't have a successful international streamer. They've tried several times at this point. BBC Select is a failure. They've tried BBC.com. BBC World is like a news thing that nobody watches. BritBox is successful. BritBox has, you know, when BritBox first launched back in 2017, it wasn't very successful because
it's very niche, but I love them.
Yes, I know. When it first launched in 2017, because the BBC and ITV had so many of their most popular shows already tied up with PBS and Netflix and HBO and every which way. And they didn't want to, they weren't going to pull back their content the way that, like, say, Disney did from Netflix or Warner Brothers did, or they weren't going to do that. They were never going to do that because austerity made it so they couldn't. They needed the money from those American companies. So they didn't have a lot of, like, they didn't have a lot of stuff to put on it at first. So what they had to do was sort of build this world of originals that they've done, you know, and now they have these success stories. They have, you know, Beyond Paradise, which is a spinoff of Death in Paradise. And they have the Sister Boniface Mysteries, which is the spinoff of Father Brown. So they have all the Father Brown, and then they have the spinoff, and then they have all of Death in Paradise, and they have the spinoff, and they have all of the Vera, and they have all of, you know, so they now have like a real library there. Plus they have these Agatha Christie's that they're doing, and they have all of the old Agatha Christie Poirot's and all the Agatha Christie Marples and all the Sarah Phelps, and like they basically turned themselves into a viable streamer. So basically the BBC is like, well, why try and build yet another one from scratch when we can't get anywhere? This one already has, you know, 8 million subscribers. That's a decent base to start from. All we got to do is buy out ITV's half and just turbocharge it. So honestly, all this buyout is going to do is basically make it so that BritBox is even better, as far as I can tell. It will make it harder for places like PBS to get their hands on stuff now, I think. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see the BBC start pushing other networks like ITV, like Channel 4, like Channel 5, to not sell their stuff to Netflix, but to come to BritBox, to be proudly British on the British streamer. I really, really would not be surprised by that. But
I mean, that's great and all, but money talks.
Yeah, I know. I would not be surprised to see if some of that happens, but not all of it. Like, I don't see the Great British Baking Show leaving Netflix. Netflix pays too much money for that.
No, I was going to ask you, do you think they're going to dump most of their catalog, PBC's catalog, onto BritBox?
Again, no, partly because so much of it is being third-party licensed to other places. But I wouldn't be surprised if, like, say, Channel 4 has the Great Pottery Throwdown, which is right now lost on Max, and Max is not paying for any more seasons, right? I would not be surprised if the BBC sidles up to Channel 4 and says, why don't you bring all that onto BritBox? Like, that's the kind of thing I wouldn't be surprised if we saw. I wouldn't be surprised if the BBC took all of the Great British Sewing Bee and brought that to BritBox. Like, that's the kind of thing I would not be surprised if we saw. You know, like, let's bring over things that we can actually supermarket to an American audience and see if we can get all of those Anglophiles who don't really think we're worth the money and convince them we are. You know?
So where does Doctor Who go?
Doctor Who, all the classic Doctor Who's, and when I say all the classic Doctor Who's, I mean everything that literally exists from 1963 through 1989 is all on BritBox. All of the reboots from 2005 up until last year are currently on Max, and I would not be surprised if you saw BritBox try to pull those and get those over on them.
Yeah.
Everything else is on Disney Plus, and that's not moving.
They're really spread.
Okay, the reason that the new stuff is on Disney Plus is because that, and Lacey and I have talked about this on the pod before, is because the BBC no longer owns Doctor Who. Now it is it is Russell T. Davies' company owns 51% of Doctor Who. And his company, Bad Wolf, is owned by Sony. And they are the ones who made the deal with Disney Plus, and that is why Disney Plus has the rights to that. So that's why Disney Plus is streaming it, because Davies wanted Doctor Who to be on a major streamer in America. And BBC America was not big enough. So there you go.
That's still complicated.
Yes, it is. It's ridiculous. Honestly, that alone, the fact that it took me like 2.5 minutes to explain to you Doctor Who is the problem with streaming, as far as I am concerned. Okay. Anyway, sorry, I'm done. I need water.
I don't even know how to follow that.
Sorry. I've derailed the pod again with streaming crap. I'm going to go sit in a corner and feel bad and think about what I've done.
Murder. I don't know how to swing it back around to murder now.
Okay, sorry. It's murder on the dance floor? Oh, wait, no, that was Saltburn.
Wow.
Sorry.
Wow.
I've been listening to that nonstop. It's my fault. Oscars weekend. What do you want from me, people?
Final thoughts.
I think people should watch Murder Is Easy, honestly. I do think it is one of the best Agatha Christie's I've seen in a long time. I love the fact that it is racially conscious. I love the fact that they really make the subtext of Christie's detectives being outsiders text. I think it's a really great adaptation, and I really think that we need to see more of this kind of adaptation of Agatha Christie going forward to make it really, like, fit the 21st century. Thank you.
Gonna let Marnie go first because she's our guest, but clearly not. So, Marnie.
No problem. Hi. Yeah, sure. So I think it's worth watching, too. I agree that it feels a little short sometimes, but I think that it's sort of in line with where your attention span is. Like this, it gives what you're going to get in two episodes. I think it feels good. I think it comes in strong with all the actors, and I think it's beautiful. Like I really like, that's what kept me going, is just they're beautiful sets. That's beautiful cinematography. It's
beautiful,
absolutely
people.
Gorgeous to look at. Beautiful. Yes. Beautiful people. A shirtless scene.
Oh my gosh. How, like, I'm sorry. I was like, guess I should wring my shirt out in this
watermill. Yes.
Because
oh my
God,
it's I all I could think in my head was fan service, but I was like, does he have that kind of fan base yet?
You know? He will after this.
Yes, for sure.
As I said, definitely needs to turn his career larger. Thank you.
Absolutely. But no, I think it's worth watching, and I think it's smart and fun, and I think it's worth watching.
Yeah, I'll agree. I mean, mostly I will agree because it is short, and it's very propulsive, so it doesn't get boring. You just got to roll with the fact that you like will not care about half of the people who die, because you won't know their names, and that's fine. But it's you know, for what it is, I think as the person on the pod who doesn't really enjoy this kind of content, like this was perfectly fine and serviceable, and I think if you like it, you'll like it a lot. It is really pretty in every direction. Huzzah. I think that is probably our show. Marnie, you survived. You made it through one.
Yay! Woohoo!
Yay!
I'd love to come back.
Thank you for coming and hanging out with us. Tell the people where they can find more of your thoughts and or general rantings on the internet.
So I am mostly on Twitter. I think I'm only on Twitter.
It's all right. I'm still there too.
Yeah, at Cerise Marnie on Twitter. But yeah, I'm there promoting all of my television stuff.
Well, we'd love to hear that. Annie, your turn.
I am everywhere but Twitter because I am anti-Twitter. Also, the moment it became an X thing on my phone, I felt like I had a porn app, and that was just not acceptable on any level, shape, or form. Let's see. For the record, though, my mom is still on Twitter, and when I saw that, when I saw it on her phone, I was very confused. I'm Annie Bundle everywhere, though, because I'm always Annie Bundle everywhere on the internet. I am the associate editor here at Televisions, and I also freelance around the web. You can find my writing I wrote about Miss Scarlet for Primetimer, because Lacey was already writing about it for us. I also wrote about the Oscars and the Traitors over at MSNBC, so you can go check out that. By the time this podcast airs. Go look me up. Thanks.
Huzzah. I am Lacey MB virtually everywhere, even the Twitter clones that none of us use anymore, because I believe in camping on my handle. I write a lot here at Televisions and around the entertainment web, although these days most of my rantings have been restricted to being mad about Miss Scarlet and excited about season 2 of Extraordinary, which is going to be my personality for the rest of this month, so go watch Extraordinary, is what I'm saying. If you don't care about any of that, the site and the pod are on social media at Televisions Blog, all one word, on Facebook, or just at our regular home at televisions.org online, where we have news, updates, listicles, recaps, reviews, interviews, I don't know, we have all manner of things on the site these days. It's kind of overwhelming at times, but that's fine. I just need to see a therapist. It's good. Anyway, if you really like what we do, you can click on that donate button up top to help us keep making all of this content that we're churning out. And in doing so, perhaps get access to PBS Passport, which will give you exclusive binge opportunities to, I'm pretty sure, every big show that's coming this spring on PBS.
Mr. Bates.
And there are a lot of them. So go check that out. Otherwise, that is our show. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Get some allergy medicine. My husband is like miserable in our house right now. Get a COVID booster if you haven't had one. I'm like counting down the days till I can get mine since I had COVID back around New Year's. And I don't know. It's like the season of a lot of religious holidays, so maybe do something nice for a stranger. It'll make you feel better. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll see you next week.